Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from text 24. Okay, just checking. Chapter 7, Canto 8. Lord Shiva saves the universe. Tam Brahma Paramam Goyam Sadasad Bhava Bhavanam Nana Shaktibir Abhatas Tam Atma Jagat Ishwaraha Tam Brahma Paramam Goyam Sadasad Bhava Bhavanam Nana Shaktibir Abhatas Tvam Atma Jagat Ishwaraha. Brahma Paramam Guyam Ladies chant. Tvam Atma Jagat Ishwaraha. Your Lordship, Brahma, impersonal Brahman, Paramam, supreme, Goyam, confidential, Sat Asat Bhava Bhavanam, the cause of varieties of creation, its cause and effect. Nana Shaktibihi, with varieties of potencies. Abhataha, manifest. Tvam, you are. Atma, the Supersoul. Jagat Ishwaraha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As I'm reading the verse, this is demigod speaking to Lord Shiva about Lord Shiva in very glowing terms. You, Lord Shiva, are the cause of all causes. The self-effulgent, inconceivable, impersonal Brahman. Which is originally Parabrahman. You manifest various potencies in this cosmic manifestation. Purport. this prayer is offered to the impersonal Brahman, which consists of the effulgent rays of Parabrahman. Parabrahman is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Parentheses. Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan from Bhagavad Gita. When Lord Shiva is worshipped as Parabrahman, the worship is meant for Lord Vishnu. End of purport. Any questions? Understanding of Shiva Tattva and Guru Tattva is said in Gaudiya line. Very difficult. Very difficult to understand. Certainly, empiric understanding is not going to get you there. Certainly not going to get you there. And having said that, let's ask some questions. Why is Srimad Bhagavatam, which at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's very clearly stated that the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is Param Satyam Dhimahi, contemplation on the Supreme Absolute Truth. The Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, which is investigating or exploring or searching for that from which everything comes, the Absolute Truth. That's the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we know what the Srimad Bhagavatam says about that. The personality of Godhead. Vedanta tat tata vidas tatam yajganam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabjate. This is the principal utterance, the Mahavakya of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in short. So why in this section, not just this verse, but this little section, seeming to make a contradiction? Yes, it's seeming to make a contradiction. So one of the rules of literature, Sanskrit literature, Vedic literature, is there's a the principal statement, the Mahavakya of that literature, governs all of the other statements in that literature. So Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam is that governing text for the Srimad Bhagavatam, according to Jiva Goswami and our acharyas. Krishna is the source of everything. The Absolute Truth, which the Bhagavatam is expounding upon, the Absolute Truth, that from which everything comes, that's Krishna. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. He's the source of all the avatars, of which the avatar who comes in 999 of the 1,000 Yuga cycles, who appears in Dwarpa Yuga, Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, is the source of them. He's the source of everything. Everything. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matak Sarvam Pravartate. That's everything. Everything comes from him. So the question is, the seeming contradiction is, here it's saying Lord Shiva is that. So now, what do we do? Here's what you do. You take that statement that seems to be contradictory, and you must see it through the governing Mahavakya statement. That's what you must do. So why is it saying this when it says this? This is the governing statement. Krishna is the source of everything. He's the Absolute Truth. Here's some indication that appears otherwise. So that otherwise, we are to understand in this way. And the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva way. The non-different aspect is being expanded upon or spoken by the demigods. We, the readers of Srimad Bhagavatam, should not get bewildered by understanding this is the non-difference aspect, and there's a difference aspect also. Like, for example, those of you that are familiar with nectar devotion, the 64 qualities of Krishna, the first 50 qualities are found in the living entities to a small degree. And then the next five, the way that the nectar devotion is written, the next five are also Krishna's qualities, which are there partially manifest in Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Actually, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva in that order. And I'm going to read to you what those, you know, 51 through 55 qualities are. And think about it. When you hear them, they're partially manifest. Changelessness. What's partial changelessness? All cognizant, partially. Ever fresh, partially. Sat Chit Ananda, possessing an eternal, blissful body, partially. And possessing all mystic perfections, partially. What's that? You know, from our perspective, what's the number? So many billions, so many trillions, so many billion years is the lifetime of Lord Brahma. So through the period of, you know, passage of time, it's from our little perspective practically changeless, but not ultimately changeless. So partially. You know, compared to the living entities. Lord Brahma is an empowered living entity. Now this is, and so forth, changeless, all cognizant. And I've been studying Sri Brahma Samhita, so I'm going to share some of that. The limited nature, because when Lord Shiva, or Shambhu, the glance of Mahavishnu has a halo. And that halo, not just the glance, but the halo of the glance, is Shambhu, according to Bhaktisiddhanta. And when that halo of the glance, Shambhu, contacts Pradhan, there's something that happens to that halo. And according to Bhaktisiddhanta, the limited nature of the living entities partially influences Shambhu. He shares a portion of their limitedness. And he shares a portion of the stupefying effect of the deluding potency. Although he's not deluded like us, he shares an aspect of that. That's this, you know, like acid turns milk into yogurt. So that's the acid part, you know, the converting the Shambhu of higher nature to his own tattva nature, like just like yogurt is unto milk. Nothing but a product of milk, but different from milk. I'm just going to explore a little bit this subject, the Shiva Tattva subject, because it fits completely into what's being said. He's this verse. You are the cause of all causes, self-effulgent, inconceivable, impersonal Brahman, which is originally part of Brahman. So one of the verses in Brahma Samhita, it starts a section where the unique position of Goloka, the residence of Krishna, who is the subject of Sri Brahma Samhita also. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha, not partially but fully. Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana, he's the cause of all causes. So why is Lord Shiva being said to be the cause of all causes? Well, because of this oneness aspect, but there's a difference aspect also, because of his intimate connection with the personality of God, just like with Vijay was speaking, taking prasadam yesterday evening with some guests, and the conversation went to, how do you respond to the Christian friend who says Christ is God? How do we view that? Well, that's the non-different aspect spoken of the Bible. The Father and I are one. There's also some different aspect. God the Father has sent me. That's true. Or I sit on the right hand of the Lord. Right hand? Yes, right hand. So there's two. One and different. You can just look at the one part and go, that's all there is oneness. Christ is God. And then there's the difference aspect. Whoops, we just don't want to look at that. So same, here's the oneness aspect, but there's a difference aspect because of that intimate connection. And it's all the powers, according to Brahma Samhita, all the powers of Lord Shiva are derived from Krishna. I mean, after all, he's the cause of all causes. Whatever power anyone has, including Lord Shiva. But his position is quite unique. So the Goloka Namni Nijadamni Tale Chatasya Devi Maheshu Haridhamasu Teshu Teshu. So Bhakti Siddhanta says Lord Brahma is looking up from his abode at the topmost position of this universe, and he's looking up. And he's speaking of Devi Dham, Mahesh Dham, and Hari Dham. And this Tale Chatasya, Tale means below or situated beneath, Goloka Dham. So there's this hierarchy of Dhams. Just like the 64 qualities, there's hierarchy of who's who, and who's in which position. So though Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva share partially with qualities that Krishna has, they don't have what Krishna has in full. You can say they share, as this verse is doing. So, Devi Dham, that's this place. And then, and Lord Brahma's abode is the topmost of Devi Dham. And then there's the coverings of the universe, which are very amazingly described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And then there's something above that, isn't it? When Gopakumar passes through the coverings of the universe, he enters into this Brahma Jyoti region, and then he somehow gets beyond the Brahma Jyoti region. Then he meets Lord Shiva, who's descending to come into the material world out of compassion. And then above that is Hari Dham. So, question: where's this Mahesh Dham? It's not here, and it's not there. Just as Shiva Tattva has its own Tattva, which is bewildering or very difficult to understand, very puzzling. Similarly, his abode, his whole nature is very difficult to understand. And to add to it, here's a quote from Adi Lila, chapter 6. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 6, which is discussing Advaita Acharya. And we know Advaita Acharya is none different than Mahavishnu, correct? Somebody say yes. Okay. But somehow, so here's a little bit of this confusing, puzzling, somehow, he's also identified in some way with Lord Shiva. Here's the verse, text 79. Rudra, who is an expansion of Sadashiva, and who appears in unlimited universes, so he's within the universes. That's the, you know, the deity, Lord Shiva, that, you know, the Brahma Vishnu Shiva, appears within unlimited universes, is also a guna avatar, and is the ornament of all the demigods who are offering these prayers that we're reading in the eighth canto. I'm not going to read the whole purport. You can look it up later. 11 Rudra expansions, get their names. They're described in the third canto, how they appeared. First, Lord Shiva appeared from the brow of Lord Brahma after the four Kumaras said, "No thanks, Dad, we want to remain Brahmachari." He became angry, and Lord Shiva appeared, and then 11 Rudra expanded from him. Give their names. Besides these expansions, there are 8 forms of Rudra. Make it more complex. Called earth, water, fire, air, sky, the sun, the moon, and Soma. Yaji. Generally, these Rudras have 5 faces, 3 eyes, and 10 arms. Sometimes it is found that Rudra is compared to Brahma and considered a living entity. But when Rudra is explained to be a partial expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is compared to Shesha. Wow, it's really complex. Lord Shiva is therefore simultaneously an expansion of Lord Vishnu and, in his capacity for annihilating the creation, one of the living entities. But just in case you got lost with all of that, here's what really I wanted to read. It's from the following, the concluding part of the purport. The Annihilator, in the Vayu Purana, there is a description, Prabhupada's purport, of Sadashiva. In one of the Vaikuntha planets, that Sadashiva is a direct expansion of Lord Krishna's form for pastimes. It is said that Sadashiva, parentheses, Lord Shambhu, is an expansion from the Sadashiva in the Vaikuntha planets, parentheses, Lord Vishnu. And that his consort, Mahamaya, is an expansion of Rama Devi, or Lakshmi. Mahamaya is the origin or birthplace of material nature. So, just to try to make all of the reason for bringing this up is it's that the subject can be confusing. I mean, I'm looking in the front and it's like all these nice Brahmacharis. And, you know, we're hearing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, reading from the Bhagavatam that says Lord Shiva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you get whiplash. What's going on? I'm trying to not make it more confusing, but explain that Lord Shiva is very complex. There's at least 4 abodes and aspects or features of Lord Shiva. 1, Sadashiva in the Vaikuntha region, just read from Vayu Purana. 2, Mahesh Dham, where Mahesh lives. That's neither in Vaikuntha realm nor in this realm. Mahesh Dham. Mahesh, so Sadashiva, Mahesh. And then within the material world, just read in the purport, there's Lord Shiva, who is the presiding deity of the mode of ignorance, and his residence is in Kailash. And then there's the Rudras that are described directly in Brahma Samhita. It's elsewhere in the third canto. Mahakalapur. Mahakala. Kala means time. Mahakala means great time. It's like, that's destruction. That's the great time. Have a great time in the time of destruction. And it's at the lower regions of the universe. So these are four aspects of Lord Shiva with four different names and four different abodes, and he's one tattva. So he's a complicated fellow. He's intimately connected to the personality of Godhead, and therefore he is sometimes addressed as Bhagavan, or here, Parabrahman. And that's with the recognition of his intimacy, of his connection with the personality of Godhead. Or the milk before it becomes yogurt, or the yogurt has its connection with the milk from which it has come. But Prabhupada is consistently in the purports, not just this verse, but each of the verse, each of the purports, making it clear that the worship or the prayers being offered by the demigods is actually meant for Lord Vishnu. One could even say it's, the aspect of Shiva that's Sadashiva, or Lord Shiva of the Vaikuntha realm. Sadashiva of the Vaikuntha realm. Normally, part of the bewilderment for us is we're accustomed to standard people appreciate when they speak of Lord Shiva, it's Lord Shiva of Mount Kailash, what's within this universe, because he's doing some service here. And he's not the cause of all causes. He has a function on behalf of the cause of all causes, and that function is he's the progenitor. He impregnates Mahamaya. So Mahamaya is an expansion of Rama Devi, who's a consort of Mahavishnu, and he impregnates Mahamaya. He is the halo of the glands of Mahavishnu. So it's a function having to do with material creation. And so he's being honored like that by the demigod. Just as this purport that we read said, the demigods honor him in that way. He's superlative amongst them. Something like when in the Daksha Yajna section of the Bhagavatam, when so much devastation had taken place because Daksha had offended Lord Shiva, Sati, the wife of Lord Shiva and the daughter of Daksha, wanted nothing to do with Daksha, so she gave up her body, and in anger, the associates of Lord Shiva started destroying all the associates of Daksha, and it was a big mess. So there's this nice section where Lord Shiva is being approached by Lord Brahma in pacifying Lord Shiva. And because he's Ashutosh, he becomes very pacified. Not the same, but similar. Here's demigods approaching Lord Shiva. He's the best amongst them. Vaishnavanam Yatashambhu. His position is, he is a Vaishnav. He's not the impersonal Brahman. Although it says, you are the impersonal Brahman. You are the cause of all causes, a self-effulgent, inconceivable, impersonal Brahman. Well, impersonal Brahman isn't the cause of all causes either. Krishna is the cause of all. So it's taking sometimes, here's an example, there's statements of some aspect of the chain of cause and effect, and some attribute of this is the cause of so many effects is being stated. It doesn't take away from the governing statement of Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna is the cause of all causes. Just as Brahma Samhita states, Krishna is the Sarva Karana Karanam. So others may be empowered by Krishna to do causation specific to creation. The Purusha avatars do, Lord Shiva does, Mahamaya does, Pradhan, these are all expansions of or energies of Krishna. And so they're being regarded by the demigods who are involved with creation as you're the cause of all causes. You've brought this about through impregnation of Mahamaya. She is your consort, and now we exist. But so that's respect for some service that he's done, but there's the person who both of them are serving, the demigods and Lord Shiva, and that's the personality of Godhead. I don't know if that helped. But there's scripture that helps us. It's just a summation. And I'll end. There's scripture that takes these statements here, put them in the bigger context of what the broader statements and the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam is, and then we can process it a bit. Slowly. And it's not by intellect that these things can be understood. Our acharyas have disclosed and explained these things. Still, it's a very profound, enigmatic subject, Lord Shiva. Our essential position as, you know, Hare Krishna devotees, he's the best of all Vaishnavas. We honor him especially in that way. Here's the demigods who are honoring him in some aspect of his service to the personality of Godhead. But he's a person. He's not in person. Not the impersonal Brahmajyoti. Nor is he the source of the impersonal Brahmajyoti. Parabrahman is the source of Brahman. And Krishna is that Parabrahman, just as is being quoted in the purport. Exactly, from Bhagavad Gita. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. He's Krishna is stating, or Arjuna is stating about Krishna, he is that Parabrahman. And Lord Shiva is very dear to Krishna in the non-different sense, he's being honored in that way. The final conclusion should be clear, and the honoring of him in this particular way should also be clear. Is it clear? Any questions?
Maharaj, thank you for a wonderful presentation discussing the complexities of Lord Shiva's position. But isn't it factual that
wait a minute.
That any aspect of Krishna's energy is complex, even the living entity? For instance, you may recall, one devotee wrote to Srila Prabhupada that you said that Krishna's pastimes in the material world are like a roadshow. When they start here on this planet, then they're appearing somewhere else and like that continually. And so, yes. But what about Arjuna? Is that the same Arjuna that accompanies Krishna? Prabhupada said, yes, it's the same Arjuna, which means technically Arjuna is expanded unlimitedly.
Yes.
So that's mind-blowing.
Not technically. He does.
That's mind-boggling. So even the Jiva is completely complex, not just Lord Shiva.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Yeah. That was Giriraj Maharaj, by the way. Yeah. In the front. Up here. Hello.
Thank you, Maharaj. One time when a book called Hidden Glory of India came, I was distributing this in a preaching program, and it has all those beautiful pictures of Krishna on the top. The Leela avatars, Guna avatars, incarnations, and all the way you have Jesus Christ, Muhammad. And this person looked at the book and he said, who's in the top? I say, Krishna. He says, obviously for you, he's the topmost, he's God, right? And then he said, anybody else from another religious point of view will put his God on top. So analyzing this verse, the cause of all causes. The demigods obviously see him that way. I'm assuming they see him like that. Somebody will say, oh, okay, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he's a Vaishnava. Obviously, he has to explain it in this way. Then the scenario came to my mind that if we will have a group of religious leaders here, and we will have to discuss about the absolute truth, like an internet interfaith, no one will budge an inch to accept your belief, because they are very 100% staunch in the understanding that theirs is the top. So would that be saying that who is saying is important? Who is the one who is actually explaining that, like in the case of a Vaishnava, why is he saying that we have to believe? Like, we believe it, but other people might not.
What you're touching on sounds like the pramana question, the means of knowing something. Yes? So, according to that which one accepts as authoritative, that's your means of knowing. If you accept the Bible, that's your means of knowing. If you accept the Quran, that's your means of knowing. If you accept this part of the Vedas, that's your means, and so forth. It depends on, so the principal pramana for us is Srimad Bhagavatam, and you read Tattvasandarbha, and it tells why. Now, somebody else may say, no, thank you. This is the principal pramana for me. Okay. So now, who's going to decide which is the correct principal pramana? That's the question you're raising. Two things. Most important is, from at least from a Vedic point of view, dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam. One must take that which comes from God, not, the other kind. Someone might say, well, I don't accept that principle. I like this principle. Okay. How do we accept that principle? So who's to decide? This principle or that principle. We accept this descending knowledge principle. And the manifestations of that descending knowledge can be diverse, but it must be descending knowledge. And then amongst those sources of descending knowledge, some are more complete, some are less complete, and then we can analyze. So, we it's like that book that Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote, Belief and Reason. We apply reason to accept this pramana instead of as ultimate pramana. We don't disrespect another one. Like, say, for example, Sri Vaishnavas, they accept Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana as principle amongst the sattvic Puranas. And therefore they accept from them Narayana is supreme, and Krishna, etc., are avatars of Narayana. So that's their pramana. So they have that conviction, and that's fine. We don't go. Or, again, like this discussion with Vijay and the guest last night. Someone is a same as Prabhupada did. Someone is a Christian, then follow the teachings, please. And here's one that you don't follow. Please follow it. The thou shalt not kill principle. And so Prabhupada didn't say, change your pramana. He said, follow it. And because from the message of Bhagavad Gita, gradually, of course, it depends upon, from our perspective, the association of one who's carrying bhakti, that one must... Krishna will take one to Krishna, for someone who's sincere, to reach God, to reach the Bhagavan. That's our position or conviction. But if something comes, and follow it. I'll just share this one little thing. It's a long story, and there isn't time for a long story. So, New York Rath Yatra, question and answer booth. It was really fantastic Rath Yatra. It's been raining every Saturday for the past 5-6 years. And predicted rain, so people don't, isn't New Yorkers, they don't go out when it's going to rain. This year was predicted sunny weather. It was 5 days of steady rain. Saturday is going to be sunny day. The city was packed. Parade was packed. I've never seen the park so packed on Rath Yatra Day. And there was no rain. So, question-answer booth at the end of the question-answer booth. One white-haired lady came up and said, do you mind if I ask you a question? I know the question-answer session is over, sure. Do you have any rules that you have to follow? I said, sure. Well, could you share what's up? So I said, there's many, but, you know, we start with these four, and here's what they are. And before I could say anything more, she said, I'm from a Jewish faith, and we teach the rules. There's the codes or laws given by God, and we follow God's laws, and that's what it means to be a Jewish person. And I said, our spiritual master said the same thing. Religion means laws given by God. It's, you know, the pramana, laws given by God. And a religious person is one who follows the laws given by God. And she's nodding, yes. That's what being Jewish means. There's laws and you follow the laws. And I said, but our spiritual master also taught us that it's very important to know the purpose behind the law. And that's the, you know, this thing that you were saying you really like to hear about is the relationship with God. She was saying, we don't hear about that. There's nothing about relationship with God. It's just the laws and follow the laws. I mean, I don't know so much. I'm not from a Jewish upbringing, but maybe some of you are. And anyway, she was saying, she said, I teach every Saturday. That's the Sabbath thing. I have a whole group. And I'd like to, like, learn this relationship with God thing and then teach it in my group. And I was thinking, Prabhupada. He wasn't interested in, you know, give up that ism and become this ism. That wasn't what he was. He was, you know, understand the principles and imbibe the principles and live by the principles. And so where can I learn more about this? You know, it was the end of the festival. The books were put away. And the tents were, everything was being taken away. So I said, here's how you can get a book, Krishna.com, and you come on Tuesday, 26 Second Avenue. I'll give you a personal copy, a gift copy. Please come. So the bhakti principle, when nurtured by the topmost prana, can carry one to the topmost position. And the bhakti principle, love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength, that's the bhakti principle, connected to whatever, you know, people have the capacity to understand, and that has a lot to do with whoever's guiding them, can carry them to wherever it carries them. But, you know, nurturing the bhakti principle, and as it grows, then maybe somebody will get Bhagavad Gita as it is and go the next step or something like that. Yeah, Amala Bhakta. We're past time, so somebody has to blow the whistle and tell me when to stop.
Thank you, Maharaj, for wonderful explanations. I just wanted to make one little comment on the comment that the little old lady with the white hair asked you. And she said, we don't have this concept of a relationship with God in the Judaic process, with the Judaic religion. But actually, that's not really true. It's only there's Judaism for the mass of people, and there's Judaism for those people who want a more intimate or internal aspect, which is called the Kabbalah. The Kabbalah, I was just reviewing their concepts just a few days ago on the internet, and they do have a goal, and their goal is oneness with God. But, but their oneness is very similar, almost identical, to the oneness that the impersonalists have, because they cannot have the concept of having oneness with the personal form, because it would violate the principle of thou shalt not worship graven images. And they consider, no matter what you tell them, that worshiping a form which has hands and legs and eyes and so forth, no matter how mystical, it's still a graven image. It's an image like a demigod, as we would say. They don't see it as any different. And therefore, but they said, but above and beyond that is the infinite light, the infinite intelligence, the infinite love, formless. And that is what we have oneness with. And in that oneness, we perform our various duties as service to the Lord. This is Kabbalah.
This is right down the alley of Jayadvaita Swami's book.
Okay.
That DBT is in the process of publishing. Yes, Maharaj? Has some relationship what he just spoke? Yeah. Well, line up to get your copy when it comes off the press. Last question, then we're going to end. Up front here. Raise your hand so he knows.
Thank you, Maharaj. I don't want to keep everyone too long, but... well, like, one of the fundamental principles in, like, a non-dualist philosophy, like
in
Shaivism...
A
non-dualist
philosophy. Non-dualist, okay.
Philosophy, like Shaivism, is that, like, there's no, like... I guess difference between Atman and Brahman, but also like no discrimination between object and subject. So I'm wondering how that state of mind of coming to the point of no differentiation between object and subject can have sort of a position within the universe. Like outside of the universe, how does that within ourselves, this non-discrimination, have position, have form, have these things?
I think you better ask the non-dual Shaivites. They're different. The short answer is there are different aspects of the Absolute Truth that are of a non-dual nature. One of them is Brahman. And then another is Paramatma. And another is Bhagavan, of a non-dual nature. So it's a mind-expanding conception of non-dualism, that there's diversity in the non-dual realm. So it's a different kind of non-dual than the non-dualists, I think, are thinking of. Because the duality here is yin and yang. You know, light and dark and happy, sad and wet and dry and cold and hot, and, you know, that kind of duality. So in the absolute realm, there's no such duality, but there's diversity. In the non-dual realm, there's Brahman and there's Bhagavan. So it's a different kind of, a different conception, different notion, different feature of non-dual.
Thank you very
than
much.
Than the ordinary, you know, not this, not that one. Using the mind, the binary processor, to get the, what non-dual is. Well, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.